Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Sometimes I forget whether we're celebrating Mozart or Falco. The Austrian rapper is getting a lot of airplay this week here at WNYC with his song Rock Me Amadeus, big hit back in the 80s. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and actually we are celebrating Mozart this week, Mozart 250. And apparently, slapping Mozart's name on your merchandise just might make you millions. His name has been used to sell just about everything. There's Mozart beer, Mozart yogurt. Pass me a slice of that Mozart sausage, please. The commercialization of Mozart's name has brought his legacy to the mainstream, but has it gone too far? Joining me in our studio is Jim Beckerman, an entertainment writer for The Record of Hackensack, and in a few minutes we'll be speaking to Bernard Garbusiak, whose great-great-grandfather claimed to have invented the original Mozart Kugel, a candy that dates back to 1890. But first, Jim Beckerman, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
So your article is called The Thing About Mozart. What is the thing? Why is he so marketable?
I was thinking about this. There are probably three things that occur to me. One is that with any kind of marketing and branding, you try and create an emotional connection with a product. I mean, the advertisers spend countless amounts, you know, millions of dollars trying to figure out how to sell a product to people and to create an emotional association with the product. Mozart, I think, already has an emotional association. I think people think of him as delightful. Hmm. I think they think of him as joyful. They think of him as fun. They think of him as happy. And that is a very good way to sell candy, to sell wine, to sell sausage, to sell all kinds of things. So I think it's a very – I think it's already sort of pre-sold in
okay.
that way. And I think that's one reason.
Is most of this – I should maybe – is most of this happening in Austria, in Central Europe?
A lot of
Europe?
It seems to be. But for instance, those Mozart candies that we were talking about, I mean, you can go into any upscale candy store and you'll see – they call them Mozart balls, you know, the little candies, little marzipan candies with the portrait of Mozart. So anyway, that's one thing is the emotional association. The other thing is the child prodigy thing, which is always people love a child prodigy, and they're very excited about that. And the third thing
really,
that occurred
I thought kids,
to me,
well, I thought people wanted to smack child prodigies.
Well, they do too, of course, naturally. I mean, when I was – I mean, certainly – I remember when I was taking piano lessons when I was 6 or 7, I got a little book of Mozart's sonatinas, and the – the opening of it, there was like a 5 or 6 page essay describing how Mozart was this wonderful child prodigy, and by 5 he was writing compositions, by 9 he was writing symphonies, he was playing for the empress. So I absolutely hated him, of course.
Of course.
And I sort of grew out of that.
But why, you know, why don't we have Bach beer or, you know, Janacek yogurt? What Mozart seems to have something different from virtually any other classical composer.
Well, my my cousin Michael Beckerman is actually an expert on Janacek, so you could ask him. He's written several books. But I
believe
think
we've had Michael here, in fact.
Really?
Yes, a couple of years ago. Yeah.
I think that the other thing I was going to say is that I think part of the appeal of Mozart, and I think a lot of this post the movie Amadeus, is I think this image has been created of him as this kind of guy with the superhuman talent who nevertheless had these very human problems. He was beset by money problems, and he had this wife who didn't supposedly understand him, although that's questionable.
Right.
And it occurred to me that's almost the same formula as Spider-Man. That's like, you know, he's like a somebody with superpowers but with feet of clay. And that's a real pop culture concept. It's very marketable.
Okay. How marketable is he? How much money is out there in the Mozart industry?
I am told something like $6.5
billion
in Mozart.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B. Mozart merchandise. And I guess that includes, of course, the big part of the merchandise is, of course, the music itself. And that's all the opera productions and all the concerts and all the CDs and all that. but, you know, also these other products as well.
Well, what are some of those? I mean, just off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head. Okay. Well, we've talked about the Mozart Kugel, which is
everywhere. Yeah, we'll talk with Bernard Garbusiuk about that in a
there
moment.
There is, as you mentioned, a Mozart sausage that was created by an Austrian sausage maker. Apparently, he got the idea in a dream. There is a Mozart torte, which has been billed as a symphony of tastes. there are, of course, Mozart mugs, Mozart T-shirts. There are, you know, just going back to the movie Amadeus, there were all these rock music spin-offs. There was the Rock Me Amadeus, which you just played. There was Elton John appearing on his video in a Mozart wig, followed by Biz Markie appearing in a rap video in a Mozart wig.
So what's the, I mean, where do you find all this stuff? Is it, can you go to an American supermarket and find Mozartwurst?
Not as far as I know. I mean, I haven't really taken an informed survey of all this. I know you can go to any candy store, any upscale candy store, and you will find those Mozart candies.
Right.
And they're packaged in all kinds of, like, I got one the other day. It's packaged in a little magic flute. You open the flute. And
very good. Yeah. All right. Let's bring in Bernard Garbusiuk. Bernard, I hope I'm saying your name correctly.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody, and to your listeners. And it's kind of scary to listen to you. I feel like I'm exploiting just like everybody else here. What a horror story.
But actually, Bernard, it seems like what you're doing is carrying on a very old tradition as the owner of Berm's Candies, a family-run business that dates back to the 19th century. Your great-great-grandfather claimed to have invented the Mozart Kugel. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What is a Mozart Kugel?
It's a concoction, and I think the important part, what I think is different to some of the existing confection, is the combination of and the arrangement of this product. So my cousin, and I have to decipher this for you very quickly, I am a descendant of the original Mozart Kugel makers, but I am a candy manufacturer and a chocolatier in the state of Washington who makes a different version. One of this little bit frowned on inspired imitations. I think we make a wonderful imitation. I think it's better than the original one, but I would not tell this to my cousin and not to my forefathers. The original Mozart Kugel in Salzburg is created by having a center of like a pasted pistachio.
Uh-huh.
A green pistachio center, and then you surround this with a layer of hazelnut ganache, what is like, you know, infused with a little bit of whipping cream to make it soft and rich, and then you dip it in dark chocolate. And you layer this rather than combining it. So the uniqueness with this confection would be if, let's say, you take lasagna and you take noodles and the fillings and you smash it together, then it still tastes like lasagna, but it doesn't give you the mouthfeel and the sensation to unmask this thing layer by layer because it goes from the inside out.
Right.
That makes one of the specialty.
Okay, so that's
presentations.
That is the echt, the classic Mozart Kugel.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Now, what are you making there in
we
Washington?
We cheat on the. My good, this is not good to see this on radio, is it? We cheat with we take in almond paste and we put just a dash of rose oil with it and we tint it green. So we bypass the. The pistachio part. There's reasons for this commercial. Commercially, they're harder to get, and also infestations, et cetera, et cetera. Pistachios are a little more like a stepchild in the United States, so it's easier for us to deal with almond paste. But probably like more common in most confections. My cousin, Norbert, he does use the original paste from sweetened green pistachios.
Okay. We actually have a link to Bernard's version of the Mozart Kugel on our website at WNYC.org. And we are speaking with both Jim Beckerman, entertainment writer for The Record of Hackensack in New Jersey, and with Bernard Garbusiuk, the owner of Berm's Candies here in the States, the makers of Mozart Kugel. Bernard, did your great-great-grandfather, I mean, I'm sure I'm in the realm of family legend here, but did he love Mozart's music? Was there some inspiration from Mozart's music that is reflected in the Kugel?
I think so, yes, very much so. Now, I'm not a scholar or an intellectual who, you know, studied the Mozart, But I do know that he fell a little bit already in the last couple of years of his life, and then he fell a little bit out of fame. And it was just about the 100th birthday when my great-great-grandfather in 1890 created this confection, because it became more popular again. People liked the uniqueness of Mozart. And, of course, Mozart was always closer to the Salzburg people than to a Viennese people, because Vienna was more the residence of the emperor, of the rulers of this country, and Mozart was more dictated to go there, and also that's how he made his money. But Salzburg people kind of embraced him as their own son. And so my great-great-grandfather, for this 100th years of celebration, actually what he did was celebrate death, but basically he passed away, I think,
right,
in
1791. A commemoration of his death.
And then for years it lingered, probably, and obviously I'm pretty old, but not that old, so... It lingered for a number of years till it was 1905 at an exhibition in Paris where he introduced this confection, and then it became world famous. And I think, again, the uniqueness is the simplicity. You know, first candies were made from honey and nut meats.
Mm-hmm.
So there we again. He took something very simple, and he took the basic ingredients, not something too exotic, and created such a tasty confection. A little bit maybe like Mozart putting simple notes into such unmatched, beautiful masterpiece.
Yeah, or taking a simple German contradance and making an art form out of it, which
Correct.
Is something that Mozart did.
Yes.
We will continue our conversation. We're speaking with Bernard Garbusiuk, whose Böhm Candies makes Mozart Kugel here in the States, and with Jim Beckerman, who's been writing about the marketing and merchandising of Mozart for the Record of Hackensack. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Mozart 250 is our week-long celebration of Mozart, the music, of course, but also the man and the marketing on this edition of Soundcheck. Let me bring Jim Beckerman back into the conversation. Jim, Bernard has been telling us about, you know, his great-grandfather taking sort of standard, you know, ingredients, making something kind of new and I suppose kind of classy out of them by affixing the name of Mozart, mm-hmm. you know, on the anniversary, 100-year anniversary of Mozart's death. As far as you can tell, how far back does the marketing of Mozart go? Can we look at Bernard's great-grandfather and say he might have been the first?
I don't know. I think scholars that I talk to seem to feel that Mozart's widow, Constanze Mozart, actually spent, I mean, she lived about 50 years after Mozart, and she spent a great deal of time boosting her husband, and she got a lot of his works published. Her second husband wrote a biography of Mozart to which she contributed heavily. So she sort of got the ball rolling with that, and I think, you know, by the 1830s or 40s, there was the Mozarteum Orchestra had been established. That was also around the 1830s or 40s. Was about the time I think Pushkin wrote his Mozart and Salieri play.
The verse play. And then the opera that was
made. And
that
was the Rimsky-Korsakov opera.
Right.
So, there, you know, whatever Mozart's situation when he died, you know, to whatever extent he was supposedly forgotten, which I don't think he was, certainly by the beginning of the 19th century, he was very much remembered.
Okay. How much of the economy of a small town like Salzburg is being driven by this Mozart merchandising?
Well, if Salzburg didn't have Mozart, they would certainly have The Sound of Music, which seems to be the other thing that tourists go there for. I mean, I can say just my own experience when I went to Salzburg. I mean, Mozart was absolutely everywhere. I mean, there was, you know, there was the candies and the mugs and the beer steins. I was in a little hotel where the statue of Papageno was
from
the
Magic Flute.
The Magic Flute was in front of the hotel. There were Mozart concerts everywhere. The other thing I remember about Salzburg was seeing chalked in the pavement with white chalk. Somebody wrote, "Tourists are terrorists."
Hmm.
And I noticed that they wrote it in English. So
I wonder how long that remained there before somebody came along and hosed it down.
But apparently there are some mixed feelings in that town about sort of the tourist industry that Mozart, I think, more than anything else, has brought in.
Bernard, is that where your family is originally from? From Salzburg?
Salzburg in Vienna.
Okay.
And I listened in, and I kind of agree, and I try to take my turn here, but I do also believe this is extremely overload on Mozart, not only in the past in Salzburg, but now even on the 250th anniversary. It gets to be a little bit of an overkill, but it's a reality of the life. My pastry shop, or my family's pastry shop at the Burggasse Dreizehn, is across the street from the Tomaselli, one of the oldest cafe houses, you know, in the center of Europe. You walk 300 feet further, and you go through where then the market starts, and you pass through a hallway area there, and there's another small, very, very small shop from my family with a Mozartkugel. Then you go outside, and I have with my cousin Norbert a beer in front of the birth house of Mozart. So there are the realities as well as the, you know, the abuse to this core, and it can get a little bit mind-boggling.
Yeah.
As you said, there's soap out there, there's yogurt out there. In, you know, in my personal mind, I shouldn't want to pick on anybody, but I have no clue how you're going to connect yogurt other than with the marketing and the expectation of making some good money with a good story. But I don't know where yogurt and Mozart would come together so naturally.
Now, so do you think it's, do you think it's unfortunate that most of the general non-classical concert-going public knows Mozart by name rather than by actual pieces of music?
Are you asking me this question?
Well, yeah,
I mean, I'm a music fan, and I buy very strange music. My staff members will attest to that. I buy concert music and rap together. There are some great productions in Europe with this kind of stuff. So I'm older, but I listen to really like a wide variety. But how to deal with Mozart? Today he would be a superstar who would be a rapper, a country artist, a pop, an opera. He would be all of this in the same time to an extent, but it's unbelievable because he can do all of it masterful. And I think, again, going back to my great grandfather, probably this time and this era needed people to come back out who highlight elegance, but something natural and unique and avant-garde and rebellious. Mm-hmm. I think Mozart creates all of these feelings in you.
And Jim, I mean, same question to you. I guess the oversaturation of the market, it risks making Mozart seem like something kind of fluffy and superficial.
One thing that occurred to me when I was writing this article was that in terms for all the flogging of Mozart as a brand, I'm not sure how popular his actual music is with the ordinary person. When if you ask the man on the street who does not go to concerts, I mean, anybody who's a concert goer knows, you know, the Jupiter Symphony,
right, and
Magic Flute and all that. If you ask the average person in the street to, you know, do you recognize this tune or can you whistle a Mozart tune, they would probably know Eine Kleine Nachtmusik, maybe. I don't know if they would know very much else. And I think that's not, I mean, if you ask them about Beethoven, they probably would know the opening to the Fifth Symphony. They would probably know the Ode to Joy. They would probably know the Moonlight Sonata. If you ask them Tchaikovsky, they would probably know the Nutcracker and the 1812 Overture and a lot of things like that. Mozart, the popularity of his music, I don't think has anything to do with I think people like his music, and I think certainly concert goers like it, and it's associated with things that are delightful. But in terms of actually, I can't think of a Mozart song that was turned into a pop hit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really, it's interesting that leads us neatly into a little snippet from our show this weekend called Studio 360, in which we ask people about their relationships to Mozart's music. And so we'll use this clip to conclude the segment. It's the marketing director for a concert hall here in the Northeast who, for reasons that will become obvious, requested to remain anonymous, giving us his sort of marketing point of view on Mozart's music. And so we'll listen to this to wrap up. But first, let me say thank you to both of our guests, Jim Beckerman, writer for the Record of Hackensack. Jim, thank you for being here in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
And Bernard Garbusiuk, the candy maker, owner of the family business Berms Candies, makers of the Mozart Kugel for well over a century now. Bernard, thank you for joining us today
as
well.
Thank you for having me. And Good luck with your show.
Thank you. And here is this clip from Studio 360.
Well, I know it's sort of blasphemy to not like Mozart, and especially in my job. And Mozart is so very popular. I mean, he's pretty much the Walmart of composers. You can't get away from him. He's ubiquitous. And I find myself being in programming meetings, and have over the last decade or so that I've done this, and suggesting, because I'm the marketing guy, suggesting that we add Mozart to a program to balance off maybe a lesser-known work or a brand-new piece. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, nuts, you know, I'm the one suggesting Mozart, hoping that it gets on this program, when actually I don't find his music all that interesting. You know, the guy died when he was 35. A lot of the music that we listen to from him was written at a very young age, and sometimes it sounds like it to me.
Well, if you want to hear more personal stories about people's relationships to the music of Mozart, tune in to Studio 360 this weekend, Saturday at 10 a.m. on 93.9 and Sunday at 7 p.m. on AM 820. Coming up, the Four Bags give us a live performance of Mozart using instruments like trombone and accordion. So stay with us and send us your emails, soundcheck@wnyc.org.